This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Politics.
Ata, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics with Fresh and Botsang. This week, a president went to court to dodge his own impeachment. An alleged crime boss went to court and pleaded guilty before the state could finish asking the questions. The police found 600 million rand for one day of marching, and Bafana found a knockout round for the first time in history. From Parapara to the round of 32, South Africa had a week. To read the fine print so you don't have to, I'm going to hand over to Botsang Modimoame Moilwa. Botsang.
Oh, wow, what a week, Fresh. I wish I could say that in your voice. It has been an interesting one.
Yes.
Except that I don't like not to sleep because then I feel crappy the following day. The day of the game, I watched the first game around 9. Then I was deliberating whether I should sleep or wait for the Brazil game. I thought
at 12,
at midnight. And the reason Brazil is my second favorite team.
Okay, because you lived.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then I've never watched any Brazilian games because they've been playing at odd times, 3 a.m. and all that.
Yes.
So I'm like, no, I'm waiting. Then I waited. Then there's an hour between Brazil and South Africa. I'm like, aye, nonsense. I'm gripping a blanket. I'm sitting in front of the TV.
I'm still recovering.
Yeah,
I'm still recovering because after the match, I had a full day.
You messed up your body clock.
I had a full day. I had to get my boy ready for school. I had to record the Wow What a Week with Mpo and Tato.
Mm.
And then had a full day. And then did an interview at Kaya at 5 p.m. So it's been a full day.
Yeah, so luckily after, there's not much, but I've also been busy trying to catch up with what is happening in the world.
Mm.
And it's also, there's a lot happening in the world. And
The impeachment committee is pressing on. Parliamentary Speaker Togo Diza chose not to oppose President Ramaphosa, filing a notice to abide with an explanatory affidavit. Mm. Parliament call it complimentary. The opposition are calling it siding with the president. The interdict is being heard 15, 16 July.
Yes.
The review is in September.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Look, Fresh, first of all, we must appreciate how the justice system has responded to this.
Yes.
If you look at the court's roles, to have the interdict being heard in July, and then, the review application and then the interdict in September, with the experience I have with courts, this is not bad. It's not a bad time.
Mm.
But talking into politics, the opposition party, I think they are correct the way Met Togo Didiza is handling this.
Mm.
I think the Speaker of Parliament does not want to upset politics in the public, and also but is protecting the comrade, which is President Ramaphosa, because she has taken a neutral position.
Mm.
She refused to file an opposing affidavit, and she let her committee, because there's a committee of parliament, and she's the head of parliament. Now, the committee has filed an opposing affidavit being represented by a senior counsel from parliament, from the parliamentary legal advisory team. And I still say I expected the speaker, because this committee is the creature of the speakers of the National Assembly to do that. But she's taken a neutral point. She's saying, I will abide to the directives or the order of the Constitutional Court.
Mm.
I will go and put an affidavit, a complimentary affidavit, complimenting what the committee is saying. So she doesn't want to be seen like she's fighting the president or she's opposing what the committee has to be done. But this is good for democracy, and this is very good for the justice system that the committee did not bend, even if the ANC has the majority in that committee. But as we discussed the other day, they must also look at the optics and what is happening. We are in the election phase, 4 months from very important local government elections. For them to go and do what they've been historically doing by defending its leaders, the ANC, it may worsen their situation towards the electorate. Because when you look at the polls, Fresh, the ANC since the Thabo Mbeki, when they were not happy,
Yes.
It's not only the voters who have not been happy with their own leaders. It's the internal battles as well. Mm. Then they dropped when Thabo Mbeki was on the second term. Then they brought Jacob Zuma in. Then they dropped the votes when Jacob Zuma in. Then they brought, and remember when they bring this one, they say the other one was bad. Mm. It's not in touch with reality, it's aloof. When Jacob Zuma was said to be corrupt, when they brought Jacob Zuma, they moved Jacob Zuma, they brought in Cyril Ramaphosa. Everybody in the ANC thought, we've got a neutral, rich, well-off guy. Look at what the polls did. It dropped drastically, 39.8% actually, that we rounded off to 40%. And look at, when you look at the analysis of the public confidence in the ANC has drastically dropped.
Mm.
So that, historical background of the former liberation movement is no longer a ticket. One thing that they can bank on, it's the vote of the rural areas and the elderly. Mm. I think it will still put the ANC as a front runner in politics, but in local government, in urban areas and suburban areas, this story of Palapala and what is going to happen at the court is going to be very influential towards the electorate.
If abiding is generally and genuinely neutral, why are opposition parties seeing it as siding with the president?
Because they expect that.
And also, for the record, I think we must just disclose that you are linked to Action SA.
Yeah.
I'm also party to that.
Yes. Albeit I am in a local government, yes. Not the national.
Sure.
What I'm saying, Fresh, is it's because they expected the speaker to oppose.
Mm.
He's abiding. He's saying, I'll do what the constitutional court is. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm. That's my opinion.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. However, they expected more strength to come from the speaker to say, I am going to file an opposing affidavit. It also depends. And I don't know how did the court accept this or the speaker gets away with this. President Ramaphosa, when you file a founding affidavit in court, you will have the first respondent to can file for a matter. It also depends on whom did he list as the first respondent. If he listed the Speaker of the National Assembly as the first respondent, then the speaker must remain the first respondent. But to just give a supplementary, supplementary affidavits or complementary one, it's actually complementary is the correct way. These are not supplementary. It's like they file those ones. I'm friends of the court. I'll support them by abiding to whatever decision the court is going to take.
Mm.
It's a neutral position for me. Mm. Politically, it's neutral. And I pray for a moment in our life that we arrive at a point where a Speaker of Parliament is a real neutral person.
Yes.
Than coming from a political party.
In fact, I'd go as far as saying that the minute you agree to be Speaker of Parliament, you should then declare that you're going to now be non-partisan. If you can't get someone from outside, or a retired justice, someone,
exactly,
then you should be able to relinquish all duties to your party as Speaker. Surely.
It's going to be very difficult. I can sit here and say I'm relinquishing my duties to my political party. However, in performing my...
You're still conflicted.
I'm still conflicted. In performing, my heart is there. On paper, I've resigned. But what I do here, I would rather have a system where the Speaker of the National Assembly in South Africa, it's like the jurist, it's a neutral, completely person who's not affiliated to a political party. Yes, we all belong to political parties in our past, but someone who has not been in the leadership and contesting elections and all that, a neutral person, that person acts more like a judge or a chairperson.
Sure.
Instead of somebody that's voted in by those MPs. But we have seen speakers. I've seen one of the greatest speakers I've followed, despite that they... I think he was a deputy speaker. He was damn good in my books.
Yes.
But the greatest speaker we had, maybe we were still new, the late Mefreni Ginwala.
Oh, yes.
I saw our politics were still fresh and new.
And in fact, she was like the mother hen of parliament.
And she would even call her own comrades to order and dismiss them and all that.
Yes.
That was... democracy. That was a speaker taking her position.
And understanding.
Yeah. That for me, the dawn of democracy, Mayor Frene Ginwala, I think she did a splendid job. She laid the foundation that the others after her couldn't cope. And we're lucky in South Africa that majority of our speakers have been women, by the way. If you look at the history of 1994 to today, our speakers have been women. So you know, that's motherly. That's why you need the motherly figure. And Tatele Chesa was also a very gentle giant, despite the fact that he was a deputy and he presided over very most difficult times of Jacob Zuma versus the EFF or versus Jacob. That was very tough for him. But those are some of the people I respect in the, or I look upon to in the South African political spectrum.
Can we move to Madlanga?
We haven't talked about Madlanga for quite some time.
Madlanga is now running in camera and audio-only testimonies to shield witnesses. Witness I, the Hawks officer who admitted secretly living at Matshwala's family home after denying any link. And Witness K on Ekuruleni corruption. Medicare CEO Mike van Wyk's appearance was postponed after Adwa Kula and being admitted for psychiatric care. An evidence leader screened a video allegedly showing cocaine being weighed. There's a video of Mike Gad fanning himself with money. There's a lot happening.
And there's also Suleiman Karim this week was supposed to appear.
From the Northwest.
Of July.
Yes.
Because of he had a heart attack.
So it's a third but he had a heart attack earlier, though.
Yes, but the conditions. Yes. I mean, if submit now, unfortunately, you know, when you look and listen to what these people have done, and all of them, from top to bottom, left to right, black and white, I would also have heart attacks. I would also have psychological breakdown. Because these people have been running, this is serious cartel. You know, we saw cartels, we hear about them in movies, Mexico and Latin America and the Asian people. But when I look at what our people have done in South Africa, and you can see that it is not only the police, it's the whole criminal justice process. It's what we see in movies. And the Madlanga Commission will definitely have to get an extension. They have dug quite a number of things. These people postponing or getting sick, it's not going to help them. And they I think they are aware. Remember, these people are professional police people or people aligned to the justice or criminal justice system. They know that they are facing very serious, it's not corruption, but criminal activities.
Yes.
I mean, how could they have been so stupid or naive that they will even exchange videos of cocaine and monies and showing off?
But you don't think that anyone's going to access your communication?
No, I disagree with that. And I had a conversation with somebody during the course of the week. Remember these things. Who acquired them is the corps. So if you are a senior police official, you are trained, you experienced, you have been there, you know that the police are capable. They've got a standing legislation, sometimes court orders, special applications, and equipment and skills to can gather this info. You know. Me and you, we probably didn't know, but the police at that level, they should have known.
So I think they should know better.
They should know better because that's what they do every day, unless they don't know their job. Which policeman will arrive at the level of a major general or a special hawk's head and not know that they've got grabbers, they've got, they can track cell phones, they can go and get a court order that forces one of the service providers to provide records? I mean, that's a common knowledge of an investigator, an analyst. They should have known that. But I'm glad they're all caught. I'm glad they are all caught and it's coming out, but I still say the focus is on the drug cartels. It is important to focus on them because these drug cartels is becoming clear. They were funding and financing politicians. They were funding and financing political organizations. They were funding and financing senior public civil servants, public service officials for tenders and many other things. Because you can see it's a value chain. There's drugs, the money for drugs is funding or it's paying back pays, like Kat Matala has now confirmed that she had given a brigadier 300,000 who was responsible for tender. How many more civil servants have received money? And the source of their money is drugs. And these are kickbacks, and these people make billions out of government tenders. And like I said, I'm waiting for the day that I see a magistrate, a judge, a prosecutor sitting at the Matlanga Commission. You know the guy that I said I differed with him this week in that opinion? Said to me, yeah, but Matlala has been there. And I reminded him, are you aware that Kat Matlala has not been to Matlanga Commission?
Mm.
And me and you last year already, we spoke about the way Kat is in a corner.
Mm.
I think he's going to look for an escape. And look what happened this week.
In fact, yeah, you did call it. You did call it last year. The chances are he would cooperate.
Yeah.
In return for whatever the outcome may be.
You know, when did I pick that up and realize that?
Mm.
When he was at the parliamentary committee.
Oh, yes.
The way he was cooperating and answering questions.
At Jose Mamporu.
Yes. And the day also IDEC had a conflict, we spoke about it last week, with the Hawks or the criminal investigation team that is now being headed nationally by General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi. The day the police gave a reason together with correctional services why Kat was moved to Ebongweni, many speculated that it was that to escape or to have access to cell phones and what. But if you listen to what correctional services said at the time, they said it's for his own safety. Now I started thinking, why would they want to protect him? Because it's very important. At that time already, I knew that he is a very important person for the police service. And what happened at Matlanga?
Yes.
One of the witnesses said, actually, Kat has always been a police informer.
In fact, while the commission is digging, the court has moved very fast. Matlala's 228 million SAPS tender case was split from his co-accused, which includes suspended National Commissioner Masemola, on the 24th of June. And then on the 25th, he pleaded guilty to corruption, fraud, and money laundering under a plea deal with IDEC. Now, the bombshell isn't the plea. It's the leverage.
Yes.
Matlala is reportedly cooperating and could turn state witness, which puts serving officers on notice.
Absolutely.
But note, it's only for the tender case.
Yeah.
Because there's still 25 other charges that include shootings, attempted murder, etc.
The important part of, and I'm glad, Fresh, that you understand that way. These are two separate things. You remember we have been saying, why mix the administrative case, the fraud and corruption and money laundering with things like attempted murder when they are not linked? I understand the state was saying, we have this person, let's merge the two cases. But is no guilt plea and bargaining, I think it works to the advantage of the state. Look, Kat, for me, Kat is a small fry in this fish. And I've been saying it, that there's a bigger people than Kat. And it's showing. Let me tell you what Kat was doing. Kat was playing all sides. Politicians, drug traffickers, syndicates and cartels, and money laundering syndicates, including tenders. He outsmarted them because he had all powerful people. And I think what angered him now is the expected protection that he always enjoyed. That's why the 18 cases that were always withdrawn.
Oh, yes.
And I say, so he always enjoyed the justice and criminal system, including police protection, for many years. And now those people are exposed, or they can't protect him anymore, or they are no longer in power. Like the former police commissioner, Bekitsele, the former police minister, Bekitsele, because he was a commissioner and a minister. Now, he's going to see on how some of those people cooperated with him, helped him, and all that. In the same situation, like, you don't protect me, I'm not going down alone. And because you are reaching a plea bargain and the state or South African justice system or criminal justice system has an opening to say, you can do that, we can negotiate. You'll probably face minimum sentence to prison. But let me tell you the other important one. This one of the attempted murder and other criminal activities, when you look at them, it's not the primary suspect. Let's look at the Teboho Thobejane's case. He's not the suspect trigger puller. The trigger pullers are on bail, the KT Malifers and others. But look at what Kat is doing. He is not implicating what I will call his comrades in the attempted murders and the shootings and the other. And the state has moved so far that They've linked this, for example, one example, this AK-47 that was used in 3.
Yes.
They've linked it to other people, not to him.
Mm.
He has been called the mastermind. But we have to prove that he was indeed the mastermind.
Mm.
And it still baffles me why would Kat want to kill Teboho Tobejane in that manner. But I understand the fact that, not to say it's right fresh, I understand the fact that probably Teboho Tobejane knew a lot that is coming out now.
Mm.
And the state has not yet secured the services or the testimony of Teboho Tobejane, because that could tell us a lot as a nation.
Mm.
But yeah, I did expect this about Kat and Madlanga Commission. Sadly, it's good that the court are active, but sadly, this Madlanga Commission is going to take too long. Yes, we see stuff, but I see this going from over a year.
Pleading guilty, turning state witness, and cooperating surely then puts a massive X on your back.
No. It does.
Mm.
What do you call that? Bull's eye. Mm. There's a bull's eye on his back in front.
Mm.
They whether he's in prison, whether he's out, he is definitely not safe.
Mm.
And as he's definitely, but like I said, he is trying to save himself by not exposing or selling out people like Katiso Molefe.
Yes.
That's a little bit of an alleviation.
Mm.
And the so-called taxi bosses and the cartels, mafias, the people he's going to sell out are the police, public service officials, as well as the Medicare 24 Van Wyk. But I know why Kat is reacting like this towards Van Wyk. It was Van Wyk who fired the first shot. If you recall, at some stage, Van Wyk wanted to be seen as, I'm a whistleblower. I may have been a benefactor of this, but I'm blowing the whistle. So Kat somersaulted and said, I'll do this. I'm inside. I've got access, so he decided to do it before. It's a very dramatic situation, bro.
Absolutely.
We must never be in crime as a belief. Look, I won't cope.
Can we move to June 30?
What's all? I forgot we are still in June.
Yes. Acting Police Minister Kachalia says policing the 30 June anti-illegal immigrant march will cost taxpayers 600 million rand. All police leave cancelled, deployments across all 9 provinces, the National Defence Force on standby, KZN, Gauteng, Eastern and Western Cape flagged as hotspots, and the pushback has been loud. The DA's Ian Cameron, who chairs the police portfolio committee, wants a full line item breakdown and argues that properly learning the July 2021 lessons would have made this spend unnecessary. He's saying clearly no lessons were learnt during that fateful July 2021. What are your thoughts on this?
I partially agree with the DA leader.
And in fact, March and March want the 600 million rand rather redirected to house-to-house operations against undocumented nationals instead.
Let me start with the DA.
Yes.
I personally agree with them. Line item, step by step, how we are going to spend the money, I think it's a genuine and a proper call. You can't lead a police service that you have been lamenting that it's bankrupt. Mm. We have heard years over years that the police don't have money. They don't have the resources. They don't have vehicles. They can't be everywhere at all times. But in a space of a month or two, you manage to secure 600 million. That's over half a billion rands that you secure for a one-day protest. First, let me tell you the one that shocked me all. Mm-hmm. You know the provincial commissioner of Gauteng, our province, reported that they will have over 330 drones on the 30th. Drones.
Mm.
They are not drones. 3,300, what do you call it? Surveillance cameras all over Gauteng hotspot, identified hotspot.
Mm.
We've been asking for those cameras to combat crime.
Yes.
So it shows to us that the police have the resources, they know what they need, and only now for a planned one-day protest. We all pray and hope that this does not become ugly and violent, which I don't think the organizers of this whole protest are stupid to can play into that game. I think it's going to be a wasteful expenditure because it's going to go to S&T, hotel accommodation, travel and overtime for the police force. And the soldiers have been roamed in as well.
Sure.
Now, my question to before March and March, Jacinda Zuma claimed that use that money wisely. My point is, if the government can coordinate the justice cluster to this level, or the security cluster, not justice, to this level fresh, if we can have soldiers helping the cops. These are the soldiers who were supposed to guard the borderline.
Sure.
The borderline of the Republic of South Africa is guarded by the military, whether it's the sea, it's the navy, and the land borderline, it's guarded by the soldiers, the army, and the air space is by the... Now, if we have those resources or money to get back, because the soldiers have also been saying our budget is cut every year. We are sitting, and this is where I want to borrow the words of Jacinta Zuma. If you can spend money on security of over R1 billion for a one-day planned protest, and you can even use soldiers, why wouldn't you have used those resources, wherever you got them from, to use the soldiers where they are needed at the borderline? They could have prevented some of these illegal immigrants who majority did not come through the border post.
Yeah, but majority of them have been here for a while. And many of them are here...
over 20 years.
Many entered legally. A passport either expired or your visa for your temporary stay expired. But majority have been here for a while. They've started families. They've built, you know, whether it's a makeshift home or you're renting somewhere, they've been established.
Well, yeah. I've always said the state is reacting. The state has allowed this situation to be where it is.
Yeah.
And I think we should be more proactive as government and not be reactive. Because now the people on the ground, we also have to understand the feeling of the people on the ground. The people on the ground is not only about jobs. And I listened to one guy in KZN, you know, on the radio saying, those who think that these people living did not create jobs, they must go to KZN now. After over 3,000, only Malawians, it started 3,000, now it's about 15,000. After over 3,000 Malawians left their spots, whether they were employed illegally somewhere or whether they were rendering a certain service somewhere, it opened opportunities for South Africans. They were only talking 3,000 in the city of Durban,
yes,
or surrounding area, or city of Etiquette and surrounding areas. Now that's a direct impact on employment opportunities, because the owners of the factories, whether you were a cashier at the supermarket, whether you were at the restaurant,
a waiter,
or an au pair, or a housekeeper,
or working on a building site,
like
happened in George during that collapse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
An opportunity has now been opened.
Yes.
And that's where direct impact on employment happens. But also, Fresh, let's leave employment. Let's leave they're taking our girlfriends. Let's leave all this rhetoric with. Let's focus on one thing. Why do we want to harbor people who are in our country legally? I listened to a video clip or interview of the owner of Eagle Airlines from Nigeria, the CEO, and actually insulted us. He says South Africans are stupid and lazy. They should let Nigerians do business there. And, you know, I responded to that thing and I said, we don't mind any nation to come and do business here legally. But secondly, you can have your Nigerians back if their business here is drug trafficking, prostitution, and human trafficking. Then we don't want that business. And I don't understand how do politicians, people who are sitting in their comfort chairs, don't understand what is the nucleus of this thing. It's small, what we call small jobs, is not businesses, small businesses, but also illegality. But thirdly, it's sitting in a nation whereby we don't know whether we are 63 million or 43 million.
Yes.
Government
can't even budget in terms of, when it comes to healthcare, what's the budget we need to look after the people in the country?
Because we don't know.
You can't even budget because you don't have a census of the people who are now living under the radar.
We also do not have regulations. For example, our policy on health and school. We do not even have a policy that says you can be a foreign national. Mm. You can go to our schools, our clinics, our hospitals, public ones for free.
Mm.
We don't even put a condition to say only when you are here legally.
Yes.
Your child can be admitted.
Yeah, because the constitution says all that.
You understand? So it is I've used an example of me living in Olive and Holt Bosch, and I've got a daughter who goes to school and can't get a space there.
Mm.
And because some foreign nationals, whether legal or illegal, have occupied the space, or they were there before me, or they even bribed authorities to can get that space, whether it's a clinic. So the strain on our already strained resources, and those are some of the challenges that government should focus on.
Yes.
Not to say much on much, but let's pray that, you know, come Tuesday, this thing will happen very peacefully. It must be peaceful demonstrations. No bullets will be fired, and there'll be no repeat of the July 2021 massacre that people don't want to talk about it.
Mm.
And I think as a nation, you must pray for that. But I'm in full support of this protest.
Mm.
I am in full support of any peaceful protest. I'm in full support of people raising their voices and their concern, where I think the government has dismally failed the people.
And unfortunately, people have been lamenting this for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, when other nations lament the same thing, nobody ever mentions the X word, xenophobia.
Mm-hmm.
When other countries say, we have illegal immigrants here, or we have people from certain countries that get up to undesirable activities,
mm-hmm.
it's never called xenophobia.
Yep.
But the minute South Africans stand up and say, we have an illegal immigrant situation, can it be dealt with? Or automatically it's you hate, you're self-hating. What about white people? And the whataboutism, unfortunately, is not going to get to the bottom of the thing.
Yeah, and for me, this is across the board.
Hmm.
And it's not about Africans. It can be Pakistanis, Chinese, and what. We have legislation that is coming into place. South Africans must support and amend this, a proposed amendment of the Immigration Act.
Sure.
I think we must support it because it has included elements that we have been crying about, the first country rule and what kind of asylum seekers. But I also we should do more. Mm. What kind of asylum or refugees status people do we grant to people?
Mm.
I think we should extend that part. It should not end now because there are protests.
Mm.
Let me tell you, after these protests are not going to stop now. The government is not aware, but I can tell you, they're not going to stop now, and they're not going to end with immigration. They're going to be extended to other things. Mm. One that is coming very strongly is the small business and protected sectors business.
Oh, yes.
That one is going to be the next round. It's not about illegal immigrants anymore. It's going to say, government, we can't allow, even if they are legal immigrants.
We need protectionism.
We need protectionism to the small business sector. We need protectionism in what is termed informal economy.
Mm.
And again, I'm one of the people who are saying, every country on earth, every has protected, even South Africa. By the way, there's rules towards protected, but they are not clearly defined, and they are not listed, and they are not enforced.
Yes.
So we have to protect some sectors of the business.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens after the 30th of June.
Yeah, let's hope next week when we sit here, things would have smooth sailed.
Sure.
And you know, people are scared. Some people are already taking leave on Monday and Tuesday or Tuesday because people are panicked. There's a panic in the country.
Yes, there's an uncertainty.
Yeah, there's serious uncertainty.
And unfortunately, the so-called third hand or third force will be there on standby.
To take advantage.
Criminal elements will be there on standby.
Yeah.
And that's a given. And for many people believe often the point of the legitimate thing is so that you can have the third hand come in and turn it into what it shouldn't be.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. Yeah, let's hope that will be managed not only by the state, let's not put the ban on the state, but the organizers of this, all of them, UNU, Jacinta, and Zizile, and the guys in opposition, and many other organized groups, let's hope that they will protect their genuine plans and protests and marches against criminal elements. They will, if criminal elements start showing in between them, they should expose them and cooperate with the state to expose them.
Let's go to Zambia.
Oh, finally, bro. Yeah, well, you know, when I saw that, I thought of you. Finally.
South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal ruled on the 23rd of June that the Lungu family, not the Zambian state, decides where former President Edgar Lungu is buried, overturning the 2025 Pretoria High Court order that would have sent him home for a state funeral at Embassy Park. The state say that they will concede and that part of diplomacy is knowing when to let go.
Yeah. They took too long.
Yeah.
I'm one of the people who have been saying, I understand the rule or the practice. It is the rule in Zambia, actually, on how heads of states are being buried. And we should not forget that it was Edgar Lungu who actually, at some stage, enforced that rule in burial of his predecessor. Mm. He himself did that. But the advantage that the Lungu family has now is that they're in South Africa where democracy prevails, where humanity prevails, where issues of first-hand, you know, social issues like family first before the state and the law prevails. And I am not surprised, but I was surprised, if you recall, by the decision of the High Court.
Yes.
I'm not surprised by the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal. And I'm glad that the Zambian government it's letting this peacefully to sail, because they still had an option. They could have dragged this to the Concord.
And even gone international.
And go international. Yes. They could have done that. It's a government. They've got the resources. But guys, it's not worth it. This gentleman passed on, if I am not mistaken,
exactly a year ago.
Exactly on the 5th of June 2025. And the body sitting in a morgue.
Mm.
That has been moved in between morgues,
yes,
government and family and diplomats. Mm. It's a little bit inhuman as well. You know, you imagine if your father, your parent, forget that he was a head of state. I do understand politically that when we enter the political office, our families lose part of us.
I was going to say, unfortunately, the minute you become a president or even a diplomat, your family is literally handing you over to the state.
Or a soldier, yes.
Or a soldier. Yes. And upon your demise, you belong to the nation.
Yes.
And your mortal remains they're taken care of at a state level. Because we're all your family now.
Yes. you belong to the nation. But first, I am for humanitarian points first.
Mm.
I am a human being before I'm a public servant.
Yes.
And I am a Mwilwa, a son of somebody before I'm a public servant. You know, and people like me who don't like drama, we've got nice wills. And I told my family, I'll wake up and don't all of you, we don't do this. If I collapse, I want to be picked up from there to the crematorium immediately. Then there's no drama. There's no baby mamas.
But we're going to now fight over your ashes now.
Yeah, it's okay. Just give them wrong ashes. Leave those ones to be spilled there.
Or we can divide your ashes then.
Everybody will get a teaspoon.
Everyone gets a teaspoon.
Nah, but look, to the Zungu family and the Zambian government, you took too long about this thing. That family fought a hard battle.
In fact, Justice Raylene Keatley's majority found the government never proved a legal right under common law, contract, custom, or statute to override the family, and that dignity, privacy, and family autonomy prevail. The court noted Lungu saw himself as persona non grata at home.
Exactly.
That because he never felt like he was still welcome at home.
Yes.
Therefore, the family must decide what happens.
Yes. And again, this is what I explained before. There may be rules there. Maybe Zambia would have applied them in an international court.
Yes.
But if you go and contest in a South African court, the South African court cannot recognize the laws of another country prior to South African laws. Even if we've got bilateral diplomatic relations with Zambia, even if we are signatories of a number of international statutes and treaties, but the law of the country takes precedence first, because all international laws and treaties that we sign are subject to domestic law.
Sure.
And that's common cause. And I was going to be very surprised, and I'm glad that it's a full majority ruling. It's a full bench have decided that it's common cause that this gentleman was no longer seeing himself as the son of Zambia.
But what does it say about Zambian politics when a former head of state would rather be buried in exile than honored back home?
Fresh, what does it say today when all heads of states, if not the majority in Africa, go and seek medical attention in foreign countries than their own country? It's the same thing. Mm. When you are alive, you don't even go to a private clinic in Harare or in Lusaka. Mm. You come to South Africa, you go to China or Europe when you are alive.
Sure.
So it means you don't have confidence in your system at that time. But why should you be honored when you are dead, when you don't have? And these are some of the challenges that are coming up with these anti-immigration things. These are some of the warnings we are giving to South African politicians to say, the fact that you don't take care of public facilities, you don't respect them, you don't take your kids to public schools, is the same thing that one of our premiers or one of our former presidents will one day say, I was better exiled in Lusaka, therefore I want to be buried in Lusaka. As you can hear, majority of politicians in South Africa, and I don't want to use other countries, in South Africa who were in exile, they are now anti the immigration quotas march. All from President Mbeki, majority of them. Mm. Why? Because they were treated with kids' gloves when they were in exile. Mm. They were treated with dignity and respect. President Mbeki spoke about a situation where one of the ANC leaders in Lusaka was caught with drugs, and the government of Zambia
intervened.
Mm. One in a natural car accident knocked and killed a very influential leader in Tanzania, and the government intervened. So you can see that they are still saying, let's treat these people with respect because we're treated with respect. But you don't respect your own people first. Mm. And this is what is happening with, look, I think the Zambians should go and revisit that part of their constitution or rule to force that all heads of state will be buried at, what do you call that cemetery or... we would have called it Heroes Accra. I know Namibia has the same as well. And I think they should revisit that because this tells us a story.
Embassy Park.
The Embassy Park, Park, in Namibia, they have something like that as well.
Yes.
And yeah.
Speaking of former Northern Rhodesia.
Yes.
Let's go to Southern Rhodesia.
You see, the viewers are going to start asking, no, what is that, guys? The youngsters.
It's fine. They must do their research.
Yes.
Let's go to former Southern Rhodesia, yes. Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, yes.
Zimbabwe's upper house approves bill to extend Mnangagwa's rule to 2030.
Imagine, bro.
Which will allow President Mnangagwa to basically move his terms from 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. He got this with 75 senator votes.
Again, it's where the majority rule in a Senate or Parliament is abused.
Sure.
ZANU-PF has the majority in that Senate, and I think they abused it to can pass this. But I also think these fake democracies of Africa, they are not learning these leaders, or even the people of Zimbabwe. The people of Zimbabwe are not learning that ZANU-PF is abusing them.
Mm.
ZANU-PF is abusing its power. It's abusing its majority. The way the Constitutional Court in South Africa has said the ANC has abused its majority in Parliament. Luckily, our democracy or our judicial system, to some greater extent, there's still a rule of law that has been respected and it's working. But I don't know why would Zimbabweans want it. The man is old, fresh. He is old.
Mm.
One, it's not only the constitution that forbids him to extend the term, or that in okay prior to this, but also his age.
Mm.
Also his age. Mnangagwa has been in the helm of Zimbabwe for a very long time.
I mean, he's been by Mugabe's side since 1980.
Yes,
before 1980.
Yes. And now they go to an extent of even amending the constitution.
He's 83.
Imagine.
My father is 83. I wouldn't want my father to run any country. And I'm not saying he's incapable, but I would want someone younger to run any country.
Absolutely. Especially when yourself, you have been there throughout the mess. Your party has been there. It even makes me question the leadership of ZANU itself. Forget the people of Zimbabwe. ZANU party itself, do they think it's right that they should have a gentleman who has been there from day one, accused of various things, including murder, surviving all that because of political party. If people don't know what murder I'm talking about, the massacre of
Kukurahundi.
Kukurahundi of the Matebele people. It was Munangagwa who was at the helm of that. He was the head of, you know, military and state security. It's on the history books. I'm not making speculation. And now he has been at the helm of Zimbabwe since President Mugabe passed on. What more can President Mnangagwa do that he could not do in the last how many years from 1980 to today? 40-something years. What more can he do at his age?
46.
46 years. For 46 years, you couldn't do one thing. They want to give you 2 more years or 3 more years to think in these 3 years you can turn things around. No, guys, this is not going to happen. It's sad. You know, I love Zimbabwe. I love Zimbabweans. I love their history. I love their politics.
It's one of my favorite African countries.
Yes. You know, when I entered politics in my youth days, Zimbabwe was a springboard for some of us to learn Pan-Africanism, to be covered in military operation. We looked up to Mugabe and ZANU-PF and all that. We looked up to that country, which in the 80s, it was the economic basket of SADC. And I've spoke about this before. You know, when I entered tertiary, one of the papers I wrote, because I studied my correspondence, about my economics papers, it was about how the economy of Zimbabwe was not destroyed by incompetency, but by political international sanctions.
Yes.
And
actually, yeah, we can't discount the hand of the West.
Yes, we can't. But we thought if they move Mugabe out of power, they will be have a softer hand with Mnangagwa. But I think the West is saying, but it's the same coin. We just flip the coin.
It's a system.
It's a system that is a problem.
Mugabe is not a person, it's a system.
Yes.
So because he's deceased, it doesn't mean that the systems in place all of a sudden fall away.
And we have seen it all over the world. We have seen it in Iran. We have seen it in many countries that people get born. We have seen it in South Africa when the Bikos and the Sobukwes and the Hanis passed on, and many were born or many took over. For each one person collapsing, 100 comes up. But yeah, it's sad. Well, you know, I wish the Zimbabweans and many other people who are in exile from their countries and are economically building themselves in various countries. The Zimbabweans are many countries. There are some that I know in South Africa who are doing very well. I wish they could go home. Not to say I'm chasing them away. Not to say they were abandoned. No. To go home, to go and rebuild their economies and their politics and their countries.
And I could almost argue that on the continent per capita, they're probably some of the most educated Africans.
Actually, at some stage, I don't know if it's still the same, Zimbabwean men were rated as the most intelligent and educated men in the world, not only in Africa. Understand? So
there's no lack of brain power.
No.
There's no lack of... I'm looking for the right word.
Artisanal power and
skills.
Yes.
If anyone can build or rebuild anything, it's a Zimbabwean.
Landlocked country.
Yeah.
Very tiny by size. Highly dependent on agriculture and tourism.
Yeah.
You know, things that are God-given. We haven't even gone into mining.
Yes.
The fact that agriculture was for many years or decades the main source of revenue or income or GDP for the Zimbabweans, and they could feed neighboring states.
Yes.
It shows that they've got the skills and the ability. You understand? It shows. Fresh, you would recall in the 80s when there was drought in sub-Saharan Africa, how Zimbabwe, you know, we didn't know at the time. I'll never forget that. We grew up eating white maize meal.
Yes.
So we had to import yellow. We had reserves of the yellow maize meal inside. When they were finished.
There was even a song, yellow meal.
Yes.
Yes.
When our resources of, reserves of our yellow corn.
Maize meal. Yes.
Ran out. Who did we look up to? We, as Africans, we imported.
From Zimbabwe. Zim.
Then we learned that it was more, the crop was more natural, organic.
Yes.
More nutritious, and we were now told we as kids we didn't like the yellow meal, but Now we're told actually this is more nutritious than the white one.
Yes.
And what happened to that?
Mm.
Tobacco. Zimbabwe, okay, tobacco is a bad thing, but Zimbabwe was one of the largest exporters of tobacco crop.
Yes.
What happened to that?
Mm.
And they have that. The land is still there.
Yes.
The skills are still there. Yeah. They don't have to import the skills.
Mm.
But yeah, let's hope this, what you call them, Northern Rhodesia and Southern Rhodesia. Guys, Rhodesia is a former colonial name. So Zambia used to be called Northern Rhodesia. And Ian Smith of Zimbabwe.
Ian Smith,
Southern Rhodesia.
So I am from the north of Bots.
Mm-hmm.
Our village is Makaleng, in the northeast. So depending on how you drive, the Zim border is about an hour away.
Okay.
And I remember Zimbabwe's war for independence. There'd often be skirmishes near the border.
Okay.
And our biggest fear, I mean, I think I was, in 1980, I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
So between 78 and 80.
No, many 1980, we were not eight. Oh, yeah.
I was 8 years old. We were 8 years old. And I remember one of the big fears was that some of the skirmishes would spill over into Bots.
Yeah.
And there was, because our village is not far from the border, that was often our biggest fear, that these skirmishes are going to come this side and affect us. And so, but depending on how bad it got, we're always living in fear.
In fear, no.
We're always living in fear.
The same people, there's the same situation in South Africa, the people of Eswatini and Lesotho.
Yes.
You know how many people lost lives in Lesotho because of the South African apartheid defense force.
No, even in Bots.
Are taking people, even in Bots, the bombing of people and the attack. So this liberation struggle was a well-coordinated liberation struggle by the frontline state.
Yes.
And thanks for that, that our four leaders had a vision, they were united, and they could defeat colonial regimes because they were united, and we didn't learn from that.
But the audacity, though, of the Nats and the South African Defense Force at the time to be able to cross the border into a country, murder people, and then cross back like it never happened.
You know, when I joined Foreign Affairs, Derko today, I was shocked that these people could go to as far as Antananarivo in Madagascar.
Yes.
To Zambia.
Yes.
To Guinea-Conakry in Northwest Africa.
Yeah.
To extract, kidnap, and kill and bomb people to that extent. And when I came across records, I was like, these nuts people were nuts. They were nuts mad. But
that's how threatened and scared they were.
Again, you remember last week I mentioned that the apartheid government would have not survived so long if they were not supported and had agents amongst us in the villages and the townships. Remember that conversation? Let me tell you, part of the problem was the frontline states, called SADC today, having South African embassies.
Yes.
You have the controversies at Azanla, Apla camps in Botswana, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. And then you have the South African apartheid embassy in your capital.
Yeah.
It created a leverage.
That's problematic.
It was very problematic. And I still don't understand why they allowed that.
In fact, growing up, there were families that we were told were suspected spy families. So that they were Askaris.
You see?
And I personally knew the parent of one of those families. That they were suspected, if it was a massive newspaper headline, that this person was an informant of the Nats.
Oh, the Nats, yeah.
It was a big, big, big story at the time. Okay, we're kids, but you could tell that this is a big deal.
Yeah.
That this person's parent is being accused of being an Askari.
Unfortunately, our four leaders are gone, you know, almost all of them. It has always been my problem, even when I started my career as a diplomat. Why did the frontline states have South African diplomatic missions? Because that was actually giving and enabling them to conspire on the liberation movements. For that, I will not forgive them. The leaders that I loved, the Mugabes, the Kaundas, the Nyereres, and all of them, you know, the Khamas, they had apartheid missions in their country.
What would you have had them do?
No, don't. Look, let me use Botswana as an example. we had a camp, what do you call that camp in on the way from
Dukwi.
In Dukwi camp.
Yes.
And Botswana was accommodating mainly Azanla cadres, they're mainly from Azapo.
Yes.
But I know MK military people who lived there.
Mm.
I've got a personal friend who lived there for years. I was facilitated to move through Botswana back into the former Botswana.
Mm.
Why would the Botswana government be so nice to the three liberation movements?
Mm.
And they still have the South African embassy in Gaborone. You are actually compromising the people you are protecting.
Isn't it called non-aligned?
You understand? Robert Mugabe came 1980.
Mm.
Very fearful, very forefront. Him, Vladimir Putin, Kenneth Kaunda, Julius Nyerere. They were very clear that we are standing with controversies or with our plan. They were clear. But they still had South African nuts government diplomatic missions there. And for that, really, it doesn't make sense to me. How do you give me a safe house, but in your I'm hiding in your house, but in the other room you accommodate my enemy? It doesn't make military sense to me. It doesn't at all.
Maybe I'm accommodating your enemy to keep both of us slightly safer.
No, the other one was not threatened. The Nats government, let me use APLA and MK.
Yes.
They never attacked white South Africans or the Nats government agents and officials in foreign countries. They never did that. The apartheid government and the white racist South Africans that time, they were unsafe in South Africa.
Yes.
Because the fight, the attacks, the bombings, the skirmishes happened inside South Africa.
Yeah, but don't forget that you are trying to eliminate the threat before it comes back more organized. You see, sending a letter bomb to assassinate a Ruth First is because you know that Ruth First is galvanizing people and creating momentum to eventually get rid of your unjust system.
I hear you.
You know?
I hear you. However, I'm saying, I don't blame the Nats government for hating us, for attacking us.
Yes.
I am saying, if the Republic of Mozambique under Samora Machel did not have the South African High Commission in Maputo, the chances of the South African regime, racist regime, and agent bombing Ruth First in Maputo would have been minimal. Now you are at an embassy. The thing is, because I've been in an embassy, I know how it works. We are in an embassy that has, say, 13 diplomats.
Yeah.
Half of them, during the apartheid period, half of those diplomats, they were not culturally, economic.
They were operatives.
They were operatives.
Yeah.
Now, these operatives are all over and they've got the money. They've got the money. They're all over the city of Mozambique or cities, of the city of Maputo or others. Chances of them paying the locals to spy on those they were housing. One of the things in history, I went to Zambia several times, but I once visited the former a president of the ANC, Oliver Tambo's house. And when the tour guide, because it's like a protected, what do you call it? The
heritage
site. One of the tour guides who was Tambo's bodyguard was explaining to us on how one day, and luckily Oliver Tambo was not there. On one day, they were there, guards and all. They woke up and they were attacked. And he was one of the survivors. He's now a tour guide.
He's
one of the survivors. That time, and the only reason he survived because he was occupying a point whereby then he threw himself on the next door house. That's next door. So the wall shaded him. But the South African nation, the South African Defense Force of Apartheid attacked the Oliver Tambo and bombed it and killed
all the way in Zambia.
All the way in Zambia. And I'm saying the only reason they could do that is because South Africa had spies in Lusaka.
They had a presence, yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, you have taken us through history. You love history.
I love history. If I wasn't doing what I do, I'd probably want to be either a history lecturer or work in international relations.
When you retire from radio at 60.
But it's not too late.
You can still go and be a lecturer.
It's not too late.
Yes, Rich.
We don't have time.
Okay.
But we cannot talk about Bafana Bafana making history at the World Cup. 1-0 over South Korea. Keir Starmer is announced on the 22nd of June that he'll be stepping down as the UK Prime Minister once Labour picks a successor. We also have Trump avoiding matches at the World Cup because the Barmy Army and English-speaking teams are singing chants about him being a pedophile and about Epstein Island. And we're told that's one of the reasons why we have not seen Trump at any of the matches.
Yes, yes. Look, I've seen some of those chants, but let me start with Starmer.
Yes.
It shows the UK organized and well, you know, practiced democracy. Mm. When a leader has promised people five things and he only delivered two, because that's the purpose. The main Trump card for Starmer, it was the immigration issue and growing the economy and all that. Mm. And he failed to dismally according to reports and the findings. But I saw this coming. When I saw the head of defense or intelligence or defense and then the one of the economic advisors resigning 3 days before, I knew this was coming because it has been in the pipeline.
But Trump then also posted it on his Truth Social the day before it happened.
Guys, but really, I would never trust Trump with anything.
No, but clearly he had the intel.
He spoke to Starmer. According to his tweet, he said he spoke to him, look, this is going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but one of these few days, in less than 24 hours, the Prime Minister of the UK had resigned. For me, it demonstrates how the democracy has matured. We put you into a position to deliver this. If you can't, you are out. But also, there's a lot of pressure in the UK regarding the political parties. Remember, it is to be the Conservatives who have weakened the Labour Party. It's weakening, and there's upcoming ultra-rightist parties that are putting a lot of pressure on, pardon me, they're supposed to be more softer Labour and all that. But yeah, Starmer is gone. It's going to be a smooth transition. We know how politics go in the UK. However, it was very clumsy of the English or the British, or even their leader, to allow that the president of the United States in the caliber of Trump leaked such information. I think it was very clumsy. Starmer should have not done that, knowing how Trump behaves.
Knowing the kind of person you're dealing with, you don't share anything with him.
Yes.
But then again, I mean, I doubt American intelligence wouldn't have had the information already.
But don't make them to be certain. Let them speculate. Speculations are very normal in politics. But yeah, I wish our democracy matures to that level one day, where a president, when we found, I see you gave me a couch today. I don't know how many pounds or euros are in there. By the way, I like the couch more than the chair.
It's a sponge. Yeah. It's not money.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to see a democracy whereby when a president has benefited, whether from a fire pool or from the dollars, illegal dollars, they will say, look, I've done wrong in the office and I'm walking away.
But obviously the front runner is former Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham. Mm-hmm. He would be Prime Minister number 7 in a space of 10 years.
Yes.
Isn't that too much democracy?
Too much of everything is never good.
Yeah.
Even if the fact that it's democracy, it's good to let the people decide. If you fail, you move.
And it
demonstrates instability
in
running an administration.
Absolutely.
That's what it will do.
Because continuity often is the greatest teller of are we moving or not.
Exactly. I mean, look at how the change of mayors in the city of Joburg has affected service delivery in that. But yeah, we'll see what the Brits are going to do. They must stop trusting Trump. But going to Trump, what, Bafana Bafana and Trump and all that, good things are happening in South Africa. Mr. Trump must know. South African football, national football team is through. Thumbs up. Congratulations to Bafana Bafana. I've got my own reservations. I know
you have a problem with the fact that we can't have a national team. Although Bafana, the only African team of purely bred nationals.
Yes.
All born here.
Yeah. And majority of the 23, actually 20 of the 23 players, now 19 because Mbogas is out.
All from the local
league. All from local league. It shows that our local league is very competitive, one. Two, that squad, it's balanced, the world squad, balanced squad, and we'll always back our national team and all that. They did not come, you see, Fresh, when we play at that level, you don't wait to give us heart attacks at 3 a.m. on the last match, guys. It should not work that way. Mm. You start launching your arsenals on the first game. Yes. The squad that played on Thursday
you
morning.
You hit the first opponent harder than any other you're going to hit.
Yes, you know.
Assert yourself.
Bring the art of war in. Don't go and study, then you pick up on the second game, then you win the third game. Mm. The squad that started on Thursday should have been the squad with the face Mexico.
No, but
we could have walked away with a draw there, or if not a win.
But majority of people who looked at the squad that played against Mexico at the opening all said the same thing. This is a bad combination.
Very bad. Very bad. And now we're sitting there with warm beers, or whether you don't know, you drink coffee or beer at 20 past 4 a.m. That was not nice. Mm. I agree with people who say, on record, on stats, South Africa has achieved a position that they've never achieved historically. Mm. It's the first time we are on the knockout stages.
Yes.
And we are going to play Canada, who are co-hosts.
And chances are, in fact, Bafana should beat Canada.
They should beat Canada.
All things being equal, yes. Bafana should win.
They should win. If they can play the way they played.
Yes.
But really, this one.
In fact, if they can step it up a notch.
Yes.
Because there's still space in that engine.
Somebody must just say, to Thapelo Mokoena.
Yes.
You're not playing alone. Yes. You're not playing for yourself. You are a damn good player, but please share the ball with others. Mm. I'm a political analyst, not a soccer analyst, but I love sport and I follow this. Mm. And congratulations, thumbs up. We don't want this stress anymore. Some of us are old. You know, I don't want to floor alone in the house because of Bafana. And we can beat Canada. I'm convinced that we can beat Canada and go to the next stage. I'm told, you explained to me how it works, that if we beat Canada, we'll play either Morocco or the Netherlands. Mm. I don't want to even... So I'm going to take this game step by step. I said Bafana, I betted.
Yes.
We have a group of Majita. We are contributing to a kitty. I betted and I lost only on the score. I said Bafana was going to win 2-0.
Okay.
And we won 1-0. But thumbs up. Congratulations to the nation.
I know you have a problem, though, with having a non-South African coach.
It's political. That's where my politics come in.
Yes.
Fresh. There's no team or country in the world that has won the FIFA World Cup team being coached by a foreigner. Mm. And I've always based it on one thing. Trust your own people. Have pride with your own people. Mm. Look at how Jomo Sono, who was a caretaker coach several times, Trot Muloto, Ntate Ephraim Sheikh Mashaba, and Clive Barker. Mm. Those are all the local boys who played soccer in South Africa. Look at their achievement. Not to this level, of course. Mm. Not to this level. But look at their achievements. And statistics don't lie. Records don't lie. Mm. I will not wear or don any jersey of, and I love football more than rugby, of the national team where we are coached by a foreign national. My pride doesn't allow me to, and this is political. Mm. Get a local coach, no matter how much we are beating, we must stand together as a nation. We must stand together because it also has that thing of a prime interest. Guess who instilled this in my mind? We were in France in 1998. Mm. I was stationed in Germany. The late Ambassador Lindwe Mabuza was my ambassador in Germany. Brayu Masekela's sister, Meba Brayu Masekela, was hosting us.
Yes.
With Dr. Ivan Koza. Mm. So I couldn't go to France. My consul general was supposed to go, but she was a white woman who was not interested in soccer and said to Lindwe Mabuza, Botsang will come on my speech. So we are sitting there. And Pierre Issa concedes an own goal against France.
Issa goal.
Now, Mabuza, the late Ambassador Mabuza, says to me, Botsang, what's going on there? Who's that guy? Why is he squatting on this side? Mm. And then Ivan Koza is sitting next to the ambassador and says, Ivan, what's going on there? Who's that white man? Mm. Ivan Koza, no, that's Philippe Trossier is our coach. And the guy who scored it, Pierre Issa, is our player. It's an accident. And then when we go back, Melinda Mabuza asked me, why do you have such names? Mm. I'm like, no, Philippe Trossier is French, coaching South Africa. Mm. Pierre Issa has dual nationality. Mm. He's French, South African. He chose South Africa. And that woman, I could see now, that's where politics coming to sports.
Yes.
Says to me, Botsang and Ivan, what are you saying to me? Mm. You're saying we are playing France, in France, being coached by a French, and a French dual national is conceding an own goal. Mm. Do you think that's normal?
Mm.
And I haven't forgiven ourselves for that.
Mm.
But I understand it's sports. People will say, don't bring politics and race into sport. Reality says, if we play France, a national of France, the flag first fresh.
Mm.
The flag. You think if I speak Portuguese, I've got the Brazilian son. Do you think when South Africa plays Brazil,
mm.
I will think my son, not my country first?
Mm.
And we used to have that clash. No, it doesn't work like that. And I honestly pray that South Africa after this should have a South African coach.
Hellman must step up.
I don't know. Any. For me, as long as it's a local, native South African.
Then
any,
you're happy. Then you're happy.
Then I'm happy. I'll buy all the Fana regalia. I wear the rugby. I've got my own politics in rugby, historically.
Mm, yeah.
But I wear the rugby.
Because the coaches are local.
Because the coaches are local. And look at, and sorry for closing this quickly. Mm. This is a revolution. You even inform me, I don't know whether we're here or the radio, how the rugby coach, is it Erasmus, ne?
Rassi, yes.
Rassi. Was being hated and attacked and his kids and family for taking Siyanko Lisi.
Yes.
To captain the box.
Mm.
But look at the political statement that Erasmus is doing. He said, I'm going to take the best.
Mm.
I'm going to take the best. I don't care whether you're pink, purple, brown, or white.
Mm.
And look how Siyanko Lisi has performed in the box. That's how a nation should thrive.
Sure.
SAFA must change its management. And after changing management, including the coach, Hugo Bruce, or Bruce, after this World Cup, please go home, retire very well. You made money in South Africa. Let's consider our local coach. That one I'm going to campaign for the rest of my life. I believe in South Africans. I believe in our people.
Mm.
I believe we can do this because we have done it before.
Yes, sir.
We haven't reached this stage. Yes, thank you. We are very happy. And it's nice now. The real football is starting because it's knockouts.
What's the score on Sunday against Canada?
Is it already on Sunday? I was fresh. I thought it's next week.
9 p.m. Against Canada.
What's the score? No, we'll beat Canada with a very convincing score. That's my predictions.
I predict 2-1.
2-1. I predict 2-1. We'll beat Canada 2-1.
Same here.
That's my prediction. Unfortunately, I'm not a gambler.
It'll either be a 2-1 or a 4-1. It must be as decisive as 4-1.
Even if it's 1-0, but I predict 2-1.
Okay.
These boys, they've shown hunger, and I like the lineup.
Now they must just maintain the momentum.
Yes.
And then step it up a notch, just a notch.
Exactly, bro. Yeah.
That's all we need. Do you think Trump will attend any matches at the World Cup?
Look.
Do you think he'll do the final? Because unfortunately, he will either be booed or they will be chanting about him.
You know, people may say, why I'm laughing, because there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
All English-speaking countries that are playing there, including Ireland, people were singing,
yes,
chanting the song of the Epstein files and Trump.
That is a pedo.
His advisors probably said, Mr. President, step away from this.
Yes.
But before even the... Look, he has to be there during the final. He's the head of state. He's the one of the hosts. And it's going to happen, I think, in the U.S., the final game.
Yes.
Now, he cannot not be there unless he claims to be sick and send Vance. However...
Many would argue he is, but in a carry on.
Yeah, but there's things that may happen in between. I don't know where is Iran standing. I want to first politically see Iran playing in the U.S. and they win in front of Trump and the Americans.
I'd love Iran to go all the way.
Yeah. Go all the way.
Can you imagine Iran and Bafana in the final?
The bad things are happening in Iran and all that. Actually, talking of that, I saw the ambassador, but we'll talk about it next
week. U.S. Embassy
tweeting
about how we say that we are non-aligned.
But
we're visiting Beijing.
Yeah.
I think, is it Lamola or Mashatile who's visiting Iran or hosting Iran?
No. Mashatile is visiting Beijing.
Mm.
And then the deputy president or one of the ministers of Iran is visiting South Africa.
Mm.
And this racist American ambassador, he got a warning shot 2 months back. He's starting again to say we are rolling a red carpet for the Iranians.
And yet we claim to be non-aligned. But I love the way the Chinese embassy said, we don't get involved in other people's
affairs
and businesses.
Yes.
But over and above that, How is it that Trump can take his billionaire friends to Beijing,
yes,
and have a whole soiree, children dancing for them? Humnati.
Because he's a pedophile.
But it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But
when our own Deputy President Mashatile is on official duty in Beijing, the American ambassador has a problem that this guy, they must send him out.
Mm.
Then we have a diplomatic relationship and a working relationship with Iran, bilateral and multilateral.
Yes, exactly.
So what do they? They are actually involved in talks with Iran.
Absolutely.
Themselves. And they want to dictate to us, thumbs up to Ronald Lamola for standing up against the country. And sometimes I think President Ramaphosa handles these things very well by being quiet and just ignoring the laments of the Americans. Let them make stupid noise. But in conclusion, Fresh, I was still telling you about the Iran thing. Imagine a situation where it happens that Iran plays America in the U.S.
Yeah.
In the World Cup.
Yes.
Imagine that.
I'd love that.
Did you see when Iran played the cheers from the crowd?
Yes.
For me, that is political. They were sending a political statement to the Americans in America. You know, you make it life difficult for them. I wish Iran goes through and through. And that's for all politics. You know, sports influences politics in the world and culture. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. The worst thing that could happen is the American going to hand the FIFA World Cup trophy to South Africa or Iran on the American soil. That will be victory of a lifetime.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
And we're done.
Thank you, Fresh.
Where do we find you on social media and how is the politics going?
Hey, Fresh. Look, I'm deep into the politics. Everything is going on very well. But, you know, Mr. Emin Mashaba was telling me that you think you're not sleeping. Wait until we win Joburg and you are in office.
Yeah, then you know we'll have to discontinue the show.
That definitely we'll have to. I won't even have time.
Yeah.
But politics are fine. It's very difficult. It's a new terrain for me. But, yeah, let's.
But also you are very... You love doing everything for yourself. And eventually, the busier you get, the more you're going to have to depend on other people.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Are you going to manage?
No, but I have managed. Look, it has started now, actually.
Yeah.
Sometime during the week, we had a meeting with the team that Ndate Mashaba has made available for us to help. It helps because it's too much. Politics is too much. You know, I've taken the political position or posture not because of a career.
Yes.
Because I want to show politicians how it should be done.
Yes.
The rules are there. The regulations are there. Respect the laws. You don't have to steal. You don't have to be corrupt. It's just to point out we need to fix Joburg and fix this country. But it's a collective. I now understand why the ANC for many years was talking collective, the wrong collective, but it's a collective.
Absolutely.
I don't like it. To be honest, I don't like it. I don't. I feel
you, as much as I feel you would serve better than most. I also
Thanks,
know
Fresh.
That you're like a fish out of water in that environment.
Yeah, no. That's quite the number of things that I hold back. I've noticed also with maturity and age that some things I hold them back. You understand? And you have to be like that. There's no perfect situation.
Yes.
One journalist interviewed me yesterday, actually, and asked me, you are a Pan-Africanist in a capitalist organization led by a capitalist, and what happened to your principles and political philosophy? And I said, my political philosophy will not change. I will not change from being a Pan-Africanist.
Yes.
But
you're willing to work within what the system is.
What the system would work.
Yes.
And I think the political party I chose would work. But I also think people are no longer voting for historical philosophy. People are not voting for philosophy. I've always maintained that I will vote for whoever renders a service to me.
I was going to say, your average person doesn't know what's in the manifesto.
Exactly.
But if they feel that there's an opportunity for you to better their lives, then they'll give you an opportunity.
People vote for people, and I'm noticing it.
Yes.
I'm in a most difficult ward I'm campaigning on because it's the elites, you know, living in suburbs and high walls. But once people start noticing that, oh, you in this, no, then I'm registering, then I'm going to vote.
Yes.
Understand? And I'm actually overwhelmed by the warmth of the way people are welcoming me.
Sure.
in the world, and obviously there'll be the freshest on this side. But I'm welcoming that.
Who are the freshest on this side?
Yeah, there's a code. I'm getting a lot of backlash. But they are the minority.
But why are they the freshest?
Because you don't want to tell me you are going to support me. You said I must convince you. So if I haven't convinced you.
But you also know me, that I am not... I'm going to vote for someone because I know them.
Yeah, no, I know. I know you are that type. You want to do that.
Me, I will always be about show me that you can do it.
You can do it, yeah.
Convince me you can do it. Even my kids know that you're not going to get my vote because you're my son. You're going to get my vote because you're the best person for the job. I don't play that.
Hey, guys, this man is supposed to be my cheerleading campaign.
My principles will not allow for me to vote for someone because I like them or know them. I must know that they're the best person for the job.
It's
first.
A good thing. We give me until 100 days in office, you will see.
Yeah, then we're talking.
You will see.
Then we're talking.
You will see my program from now until... And it's not going to be on this platform. You'll see it in other platforms and other media houses.
I want to see him and Mashaba swimming in the pothole. Convince us.
No ways. We do better. We are not mermaids.
Brahman. Okay, the mummy is in that.
Yeah, but the pothole. Actually, you know, I'm covering where we are, four ways and that last day. And there's that whole sinkhole, or whether it's a portal or what.
Yes,
and then one of my colleagues was saying, please don't go and try and swim. It's at best water in that last day.
Don't do that.
No. I'll drown because I can't swim, so I'm not going to do that.
Where do we find you on social media?
Fresh Air and the followers. Let's continue this discussion and engagements on +27 8384 7787 on WhatsApp and at Botswana M on social media handles.
Yes, sir.
Until next week, bro.
This has been another episode of Wow What a Week, #Polytricks, done on zero sleep, thanks to Bafana Bafana. We are coming to you from Discover TV. Let them be your stage. Discover TV and Four Ways in Johannesburg. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for the cinematography, Keleso Modisakeng, our executive producer, and most importantly, you for being a part of the show, for commenting, for liking, for subscribing, and for joining the debate at the bottom of the screen. Please join us again next week. Until then, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We are out of here.